ACEC is excited to announce that registration is now open for its fall conference taking place in Marco Island, Florida, this October. That's right, after a year of Zoom and virtual meetings, we're excited to be bringing our fall conference back as an in-person event. And we can't tell you how excited we are to look forward to seeing you there in person for all of the content, networking, and education that the fall conference is known for. Log on to www.acec.org for more information. We can't wait to see you there.
Welcome to the Engineering Influence Podcast, presented by the American Council of Engineering Companies and sponsored by the ACEC Life Health Trust. A few weeks ago, Walter P. Moore published a white paper titled An Introduction to Flood Protection, What Owners Need to Know to Protect Their Properties. The white paper focuses on numerous flood protection approaches and building owner needs and provides an in-depth review of the flood protection process. One of the authors of the report has joined us on the program today. Ray Drexler is a principal and senior project manager in Walter P. Moore Diagnostics with experience in diversified aspects of forensic engineering. Ray's expertise includes evaluating, assessing, and designing repairs for distress related to facades, steel concrete structures, and below grade waterproofing. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Jerry. Good to be with you.
So Hurricane Nicholas swept through Houston last week, dropping as much as 6 inches of rain in some parts of the city. How did the city fare?
I think generally that the city fared fairly well from a flooding perspective. Obviously, localized flooding is typical with heavy rains. The streets are designed to start carrying water off for anything greater than roughly a two-year return period. I think the high winds, quite frankly, caused more problems taking out power lines. And again, stressing the importance of, you know, passive flood protection, even if you've got emergency power, if you want to flood protect your asset.
Yeah, I guess Houston's been hit a few times, and it's becoming more common, it seems, that we're seeing flooding events around the country. But given that Walter P. Moore published this paper, is it safe to assume that you've found that many owners don't take flood protection seriously enough?
No, I think that a sophisticated owner like a medical facility, some of the corporate campuses, high-end manufacturing folks appreciate the full magnitude of flood-related interruptions, and they do take good preventative actions. On the other end are owners that make calculated risk-reward decisions and think the cost of flood protection outweighs the cost of rebuilding or disruptions. So they sort of take the approach of, you know, hey, you know, I'm going to roll the dice. I'm going to see what I get. Our white paper's more targeted owners that may not fully appreciate the magnitude of what disruptions floods can cause in terms of interrupting their operations, economic damages, things like that. And it's just it's the old caveat emptor, you know, buyer beware. And if you want to build in a floodplain, you know, you need to be aware of that. And I realize that might be a leading question, and I'll let you keep asking there, Jerry. Sorry.
No worries. It does seem to me, and you could correct me if I'm wrong, that flooding is becoming a more common event than it has in the past. And have you found that owners are coming more around to the fact that they need to take flood protection seriously?
I think that owners are coming around to that. It's, you know, one of the problems in a city like Houston, the more you pave over the city, the faster the water concentrates. And it channels it to places, you know, such as, say, a basement loading dock. And historically, we've put the guts of the building, the MEP systems in the basement, because, you know, nobody wants to rent the basement normally. So you lose your emergency power, you lose your HVAC systems, things like that.
I'd never actually thought of it. That does make sense. So what do you, instead, you put them in the attic?
It's nice if you can put them on an elevated place. Smaller cooling tower packages can get put up on the roof of a building, things like that. Another approach that we've used in the past is you basically build a walled MEP yard where you put all your equipment. Then you need to put in a sump pump. You need to drain it. You need to have access points to it. So another approach we've used before is we've actually raised up the equipment, you know, put it 10 feet up in the air out in the mechanical yard. And that way, if you elevate it, you don't have to worry about keeping power to keep a sump pump or getting stuff trapped in there.
So in your white paper, which I thought very well done, what size property or structure are you addressing? What size owner does this go to?
I'd say any reasonable size property is where it could be applied. You know, we've done simple things like testing a facade for a client, all the way up to flood protection of the medical center. The firm has been working in there since before Allison, which was roughly 20 years ago now. So we've got two decades of experience there in the med center. So it really depends on what the client or the owner has that they want to flood protect. And that determines the project size. I'm not trying to give a non-answer here, Jerry. Nothing is too big, nothing is too small, I guess, is the approach. And if folks want to understand, can we flood protect this? I'd love to look at it, help them figure it out. Some things are fairly easy to do. Some are extremely complex and very involved. We've had projects that have ranged, from $20,000 for the facade protection to, campus-wide stuff that I'll just say has been north of $10 million, but south of $100 million. I don't really want to say, how much money different clients have spent on flood protection.
You addressed it earlier. It's basically a question of the owner's risk tolerance, how much they're willing to risk in contrast to how much they're willing to pay for the protection itself. As a flood protection engineer, how do you balance the owner's risk tolerance?
That's a really tough one. And I think the best approach is we try to educate them. I'll use a simple example. If you get flooded every year and it costs you $10, to restore your finishes, it's kind of pointless to be spending $1,000 on flood protection, because that's a 100 times more. So you'd have to have 100 annual floods to justify that cost. But on the other side of the fence is if you flood every year and it's $100,000 of damage every year to fix the damage, and it's only $1,000 to provide flood protection, it's 1/100 of the damage cost is the fixed cost. That's to me a no-brainer. But the real tough question is when the protection cost is on the same order of magnitude as the repair cost. Well, all right, they got to decide, what's the risk? Am I going to get hit again? Or they take the look at, can more business or a higher rent for my facility if I can advertise that I've got this higher level of flood protection? So again, there's a lot of factors that I can't tell them what the correct answer is. I can say, here's your exposure. Here's your cost of protection. You guys have to provide me what was your cost of loss or disruption. And I can, help walk them through it and the pros and the cons of the different systems.
So would it be a case then of taking their loss and then calculating something that a level of protection that would be appropriate for that loss level? I mean, there are different levels of flood protection that someone can have. There is some possibility of having total flood protection and then having 10% of that. So, I mean, is there a range?
Yeah, there's sort of a continuum, and I'll I'm not going to name the owner, but have one client that we've worked with several times, and they had an incident. It ran down the loading dock. It took out their basement equipment. All right, they tried to get somebody to do a flood study, and it just kind of floundered around for 9 months, nearly a year. And then they just finally called us as the engineer and said, I don't want a flood study. I just want to protect the basement of my building. What do I need to do? And so, we gave them, I'll call it a very simplistic, low-cost flood protection approach. All right, what was the event? Well, water ran down the street, went into the loading dock, access ramp into your basement, flooded out your basement. All right, well, we've got walls going down into that basement loading dock. We designed them a float-up floodgate, which is 100% passive system. If nobody's parked on that gate, when the water level in the street rises, the gate floats up. As the gate floats up, it seals the opening. That was a very simple, easy to do, didn't have to build a lot of walls, didn't have to put in a huge pumping system. So that was the first level. All right, you know, we took care of that. That was the easy passive. And they said, well, rain can be falling into my loading dock area as well. So even if you've cut off water running in from the street, I want to make sure that it doesn't, because you've got this large concrete area that's basically sheeting water in towards the lowest point, which is the basement door. We upgraded their sump pumps in that area as well. So, you know, we did the active protection of provide a sump pump, which requires power to pump the water out that gets in the enclosure. We designed a passive gate that flips up at the top to prevent water from getting into it. There were other more expensive options we could have gone down, which would have involved putting float-up gates at this basement loading dock, but that wasn't really justified. We also added a flood door that they closed at their basement loading dock. So now we've got three lines of defense for them. We've cut off the water coming down from the street. We've added a sump pump in the pit, and then we've put a door slightly higher than the bottom of the pit so that, you know, they've got three lines of defense. It's worked out great. It was a wonderful solution. They loved it so much. They said, hey, we need to protect our garage. So the next year we came back and we protected their garage. So, you know, building on the story, just one last little piece here to keep it going, Jerry. So we had, it was the tax day flood, went into the basement, caused the damage. We installed the float-up floodgate at the street, and we hadn't completely finished construction, but it deployed before the Memorial Day flood the following year, kept their basement dry. So then we went in the next year, we protected their garage. And again, we hadn't finished construction, but we'd done flood testing of the garage floodgates 2 days before Harvey hit. Guess what? These guys haven't had a flood problem since. And we've had, you know, three fairly major events since we started this operation for them. You know, one triggered it. We missed that one because they didn't know they needed to do it. But, you know, everything thereafter, those guys have stayed, you know, dry and for a very affordable, you know, fee.
Well, so they were happy campers. Harvey. Harvey was horrendous. To stay dry in that, that's impressive.
We got photos that, you know, they had a little bit of leakage. Water blows in over, you know, a parking garage generally has a wall and then an open section. So air flows, you know, water blows in through those open air sections, but, you know, didn't get, but, you know, a little smidgen of water right inside the gate. We've got photos with, you know, 2 feet of water outside the parking garage, and it, you know, pretty much dry inside the garage right behind the gate. So it was a very satisfying feeling. You know, I really like those projects because it's very easy to see how have you helped these people and how have you protected them and made their lives better. You know, we're improving folks' lives, and that's a great feeling.
I would say they're also responsible for keeping their lives improved by maintaining these things. It would seem to me that you could put in all the great systems as it goes, but if they don't keep them up, the system isn't going to keep running forever. How do you plug that hole, so to speak?
It's a lot like owning a car. There's different levels of maintenance. You know, every, what is it, 5,000 miles, you're supposed to change your oil. You know, every 20,000, you're supposed to get the engine serviced. You know, every 100,000, you need to change the transmission or whatever. It's just like that. And what we like to do is the advantage of a passive system is, you know, it doesn't have as much input to make it work, but it still requires maintenance. You need to check the seals to make sure you don't have a cut seal so that when this float up gate floats up, the water just doesn't run around the sides of the floodgate. There's little rubber seals that go up against essentially a wiper wall. Well, you need to make sure that the wiper walls are smooth. So it's just part of the routine maintenance. And I like to encourage folks in the springtime, run a drill to make sure everybody understands how to deploy the system, because that's before the hurricane season. It's a good refresher. Then after the hurricane season in the fall, you have a look over, you know, did everything work right? Great. Hey, we didn't have an event, even better. Will the system still deploy next time? Let's do a little bit of preventative maintenance. Let's clean the seals. Let's lift the doors. Let's swing the doors. Let's check the gaskets. All those sorts of little things that we basically recommend they put in an operation and maintenance manual. You know,
And it seems like hurricane season just keeps getting longer and longer. So
yeah,
I guess they'd be doing gift. One before the other.
Yeah, it's the gift that keeps giving. Welcome to living on the Gulf Coast.
Yeah. to broaden the subject, just to close here, there's the Federal Flood Insurance Program, which allows businesses and individuals to build in flood-prone areas. What do you, as a flood engineer, what do you think of that? And how does that affect your work?
You know, it gets back to sort of what I think I opened with, you know, it's pay me now, pay me later. Land is cheap in flood prone areas. So, you know, your initial construction costs are low. The problem is, you know, you build in that you're subject to more rapid flooding. And now if you build a flood wall around something that you've built in the flood prone area, you force the flooding downstream or force it back further upstream. So you're harming your neighbors. So you want to be a good steward of the watershed that you're in. I really don't like the idea of building in floodplains. It's asking for trouble. It's increasing the likelihood of a flood. It's increasing the potential consequences for others. In Houston, we've added additional retention needs. So if you take volume out of the floodplain, you've got to provide compensatory storage so that, you know, if you want to take out X, you know, you're making sure that X doesn't go downstream and or upstream and create problems for others. Was that a sufficiently short answer, or did I get too wordy?
No, that was good. That I've often thought about the flood program because it seems to me you're basically giving people carte blanche to do something that's probably not the brightest thing to do.
No, and sort of following up on that, you know, it gets back to the flood insurance program. You know, if somebody makes a flood claim on property X in floodplain, you know, they shouldn't be allowed to just rebuild it there. Or if they are, they should have to pay some additional fee in because, you know, it shouldn't be, you know, a carte blanche as we were saying of, you know, hey, build in a problematic area and get everybody to keep bailing you out on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's how I feel. Okay, well, thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Jerry, I appreciate it. And, you know, feel free to reach out if you've got any questions or if the listeners have questions. I assume you can put them in contact with me. I'd love to help them.
I'll put a link to your white paper in the show notes so they can get to that. So we've been talking with Ray Drexler of Walter P. Moore, and you've been listening to the Engineering Influence Podcast presented by ACC and sponsored by ACC Life Health Trust. Thanks for listening.